or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
You know, there are some people who like to play things by the rules. They do everything right. They have all their ducks in a row. They go to school. They get all the credentials. Everything's perfect. And then there are other people who like to get shortcuts. Say, all those years in school, all that money, all that what I could have been learning on the job instead of learning that theoretical stuff. If you are that kind of a person, I think this segment will be of interest to you. As you know, in this economy, a college degree is seen by many as a requirement to land a decent job. And alas, even that too often is merely a hunting license, far from a guarantee of bagging big game, that great job. And that would especially seem so in engineering. Because after all, engineering is a field that requires a lot of technical knowledge. And in fact, the bachelor's in engineering is among the very longest to complete because there's so much physics and chemistry and math and all that stuff. The expected time to completion for an engineering degree is 5 years, not four. And in real life, many people take six if they finish. With me to discuss this issue, I'll back up a little bit. Is the bachelor's degree really required, even in engineering? As in most fields, 90% of people do that traditional route. They spend $100,000 or even $200,000 at a, you know, brand name designer label private college, and those 5 or 6 years to get that hunting license in hopes of getting that job. But 10% of engineers, as in most fields, don't. With me, two in the studio, one on the phone, are three such folks, engineers, all with good jobs, and all without a college degree. What lessons can we learn from these guys that would apply to any of us who'd like to take a shortcut, whether it's avoiding a long, expensive back-to-school stint or something else? On the phone with us, he was hoping to be here in the studio, but he got a stomach virus and he's with us on the phone, unfortunately. Nathan Plant, he's an engineer at Cepheid. That's a top medical diagnostics company based in Sunnyvale. Nathan, welcome to you.
Thanks, Marty.
And Doug Wolf is a senior systems engineer at C8 Metasensors in San Jose. Doug, welcome to you.
Thanks, Marty.
And Chris Cassell is a quality assurance automation engineer at Imation, a Silicon Valley security firm, and welcome to you as well.
Thanks, Marty.
Okay. So, do people question the quality of your engineering because you don't have a college degree?
Well, no one smart does.
Why? Why is that smart, to not question it?
Well, it's not a matter of being smart because you don't question it. It's a matter of intelligent people look at the quality of your work and go with what they see.
But a lot of companies are afraid of, you know, they figure that a degree with all those courses certifies a measure of competence. Is that an incorrect assertion?
I would say so, yeah. Maybe to get your foot in the door. But once they see a resume with, 5, 10 years worth of work experience, that kind of speaks for itself. If you're not capable, you won't get that kind of work history.
Nathan Plant, you know, how often do you get people questioning you because of your lack of degree? How much has it hurt or helped you in landing a job?
In my experience, it's usually at the very start of the process, not so much once you get in for an interview or certainly not once you're working.
How big an impediment is it, really? Have you found, any of you guys?
Well, you know, I have found that certain jobs I don't really apply for because I think that they'd want a degree. A friend of mine works at Intel, and he's trying to get me over there, and I've been hesitant to apply because I figure a big firm like Intel, they're going to have a requiring process or a hiring process that they're going to look for some sort of college education. And so I just haven't really applied over there.
Yeah, I've had a similar experience where I've had some email conversations with a recruiter at a biotech firm who at some point, you know, she wanted to take it to the next level and asked me where I'd had my college degree, where I'd gotten my degree. And I told her flat out, I don't have one, and here's my work experience, you've seen that. And extreme case, but I never heard anything back from her.
Doug, Doug Wolf, have you heard anything about this, the degree and how much of an impediment it is in landing the job?
I've never found it to be an impediment, but also my attitude is anyone who doesn't respect knowledge more than a degree, I didn't want to work for anyway because the work environment's going to be, fairly unpleasant.
Okay, now I want you guys to put your statesman hat on now. I don't want you to be an advocate for no degrees. Now, if you were God and God were looking down and God were evaluating your work as an engineer, would God say that you were better or worse for having acquired your skills from outside the degree? In other words, self-study, workshops, self-certifications, whatever else you did other than a college degree. Would the God say you were a better or worse engineer for having spent the amount of time that you spent, learning outside of school rather than in school?
I would say probably I'm better for it. But then I've known some really, really bright people that went the college degree route, and I would never, knock their engineering skills.
Okay. Well, so full disclosure here, I did all my lower division coursework for a computer science degree, so I don't have no college. I have some college.
Yeah,
so.
Lower division, by the way, for people who don't know the term, is your freshman and sophomore courses, your prerequisites, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, continue.
I would say that I wouldn't recommend not getting any sort of education. I mean, but you don't have to go to a four-year college, I've found, to get that education, especially now in the days of Google.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree with that.
I'd like to emphasize Chris's point that education is absolutely key, but there's a whole bunch of ways to get education. Just because you don't have a college degree is not an excuse not to be very, very educated.
Doug, describe your education. Walk me through, and it doesn't always have to be career-related. Part of your development as a human being, as well as a professional, is getting educated. I mean, one could argue even that poetry is of value. So tell me, describe how you became, to use your own term, well-educated. Without college.
So I won't actually describe myself like that. I would describe myself as widely educated as opposed to well-educated because I hope any intelligent human being well aware of the gaps in my education and try to fill those in. But it's funny you mentioned poetry because I've spent an awful lot of time reading it. I think a great education, not just a technical education, but a great education is very wide. It's worth working your way through Dante, and I know that sounds unrelated to getting a job. It's worth learning things that are difficult to learn. First off, it's good practice for when you get into a work position where suddenly you're being asked to do things that are very difficult. And that sort of leads to, I think, one of the great ways to do well in a tech field, particularly without a degree, is when something difficult has to be done and nobody knows how to do it, step forward.
Wouldn't it argue that, certainly doing something difficult is important, but I mean, wouldn't it be wiser to do your learning of something difficult in something that's practical rather than Dante that isn't, unless you're arguing that the ability to understand great literature is so important to being a thoughtful human being? What's your reason why learning something difficult needs to be in something not related to your career?
Because learning is in itself a skill. Learning to hang in there through difficult problems that you don't understand is in itself a skill.
But then why not? You can do that. Let's say you're trying to be a computer scientist or an engineer. Take something really difficult that's an engineering problem. Why, figure out, trying to decipher Shakespeare's intricacies or Dante's intricacies?
Shakespeare isn't going to make you a better engineer, but I think it's going to make you not just a more interesting person, but a more interested person. You will see more in the world.
Before I turn, I want each of you to address this, but I want to hear more about your wide education. Describe for us what are some of the signature components of that wide education, Doug Wolf, that you've had outside of the university, of course, because you don't have a degree.
Lots and lots and lots and lots of time reading on every subject, building telescopes when I was young. Spending enormous amounts of time learning math, science, and physics, even when it was really, really, really hard. Calculus was a huge stumbling block.
So you learned it by yourself?
Yes.
So you have to be really a self-motivated person rather than most students need to have, show up Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 7 to 9 a.m., read these pages, the midterm is this date. You're really a self-motivated guy. Is that key?
It is key, but I just want to, it's not entirely by yourself because, as Chris said, there's Google, there's the Internet. When you're stuck, you got to go find people to talk to who can help.
Okay, let's turn to you. Chris Cassell, you had some of your education in the lower division in college, but I imagine a lot of your learning, both career related, that is, as an engineer and as a human being, has occurred outside of the school context. What are some of the central kind of ways in which you did your learning outside of school?
So basically, it's all practical, hands-on. When I'd get an assignment that I didn't understand, I'd go research and learn whatever I needed to do to complete that. Also, I've got a wide range of interests outside of work. I like to sail. I'm a do-it-yourselfer. So every time a new project comes up on the house, I want to learn about it. I'll figure it out. I also have this insatiable curiosity where just certain subjects that I'm interested in, I like to go read about and learn about. And then if there's any sort of way to do anything or create anything about that, I like to sort of get my hands in there and sort of figure it out. So, I guess to answer your question,
you're intrinsically curious. You like to keep learning stuff. And Nathan Plant, what would you say were the core kind of core learnings, the ways in which you did your learning outside of university?
Well, like Isaac Asimov, I spent a lot of time in the library when I was younger. And I remember when I was in probably sixth or seventh grade, I was wrestling with time dilation theory and time dilation equations, trying to figure out how many years I would age if I could make it to the Andromeda Galaxy and back, you know, and relatively speaking, how old the Earth would be in my absence. And that kind of stuff, little things like that that fascinated me here and there, really, I think, that's the foundations of my education entirely. I don't really delve too deeply into many subjects, but when I do, I tend to kind of exhaust everything I can find.
So the common thread among all of you really is that you are intrinsically curious people, and that you don't need the Damocles sword hanging over your head of the midterm and the grade to motivate you to go to the library in the old days or search on the internet in the new days. And that really, so the takeaway for you, my dear listeners, is if you are somebody who is intrinsically just driven to keep learning, whether it be in your career or simply as a human being, to be a more thoughtful human being, then maybe it's worth evaluating whether you want to take the risk of having to convince employers that, yes, judge me on my merits, judge me on how well I can think, judge me on my work product, not a stupid piece of paper, which too often is a testimony more to one's endurance and willing to put up with crap, that learn stuff that you have no interest in, than really a measure of your ability to be a fine employee. Does that seem like the big takeaway that I've described as the differentiator?
I think that's a big part of it, Marty. Sorry, Chris. I would say also that another huge component of it is, you know, doing good work, showing up, being on time, and proving yourself once you get into that job. That's really the only way you can keep the ball rolling.
Of course,
if you get into a position and then you sort of coast, I think that would pretty much seal the deal for you.
Of course, so many of my listeners are worried about getting the job to begin with, and so I'm focusing here on the fact that if you do think, my dear listeners, that you are a self-starter, curious, and you can and will do a lot of your learning on your own with the internet, with some online courses. You know, there's nothing in the law against individual courses, but if rather than the whole degree full, the whole enchilada, you feel you would actually learn more of relevance and be self-motivated, you might want to evaluate whether going back to school for another degree or certificate is worth it or not. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. The topic, we can call it shortcuts. Do you really need to go the long, expensive, painful route of getting another degree for career purposes? I mean, if you simply love the, you know, 4 or 5 year experience of being out of the work world and hanging out with people and all the extracurriculars, living in dorms, some combination thereof, and you can afford it, okay. But there is always another way, and one of the main focuses here on Work with Marty Nemco is to talk about not the obvious, but to talk about under-the-radar ways of succeeding in your career. And that's why I'm talking to these three dudes. These are three engineers, none of whom have a college degree, and all of whom are successful. I am talking with Doug Wolf. He is a senior systems engineer at C8 Metasensors. I'm talking with Nathan Plant, who is an engineer at Cepheid, a top medical diagnostic company, and Chris Cassell, who is a QA automation engineer at Imation, a 3M company. Let's turn to the imposter syndrome. Even people who have PhDs often feel like they're just kind of skirting their way through, getting by on the seat of their pants. Their knowledge is just barely enough to get by, if that. And a degree helps you feel, even if irrationally, that you have a measure of competence. To what extent do you guys who don't have degrees, do you suffer from the imposter syndrome at work?
I did for a very long time until I realized my work stood up for itself and that nobody else knew any more than I did. We're all out there particularly in cutting-edge fields. The company I used to work at, we used to tease that the great thing about this job is that nobody's ever done this before, and the awful thing about this job is that nobody's ever done this before.
Chris, sir.
I definitely, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Nathan, go ahead.
I definitely experienced that usually at the beginning of a new assignment, right? Whether starting with a new company or starting a new assignment within a company I've worked for. But again, I think to echo what Doug just said, once you start doing the work and people see that you're sincere about getting it done right and that you're willing to, learn and make sort of adapt to changes that come up, you're fine. And then once you get one thing under your belt, then it becomes easier to do another thing. It becomes easier to do a third thing, a fourth and fifth, and on and on and on. And your confidence just it increases as you do better.
Chris Cassell?
Yeah, I'd like to second that. When you start at a company, typically you'll interact with the engineers and you kind of feel like a little bit of an imposter. But as you gain credibility and as your work shows for itself, and as you even help uncover new problems and solve new issues, your reputation grows, and then that imposter feeling goes away. You actually feel like a contributor.
I want to spend a little more time on the getting of the job. I understand that once you're on the job, you have a chance to prove yourself how smart, how hardworking, and all that stuff. But, so often many employers, as you were saying earlier, Chris, large employers especially, are very likely to have a minimum requirement. You will have a bachelor's degree, period.
Yeah, so, or you won't get in the door, yeah.
Right. So I want to, instead of asking you for your input, I'm going to share with you as a career counselor what I do with my clients who don't have degrees as a way of their trumping their not having a degree. And you tell me honestly if you think that would work better or worse than what you have done. I have them lead with it. I have them in their cover letter say, I am delighted to see job number 4364 on Dice because I believe I'm a good fit. But I suspect you may be tempted to throw away my to press delete on my application because I don't have a college degree. Actually, I think it's a plus. It's why you should give me special consideration. Having heard and seen so many CS degrees or engineering or whatever it is, holders say that so much of what they learned was irrelevant to actually being great on the job. I made the choice to choose the road less traveled. Instead of attending State U, let alone the ridiculously expensive private U, I attended UU, Y-O-U-U, where I created a self and mentor designed collection of courses, self-study, certifications, attending workshops, etc. I attach a portfolio of everything I've done. I like to think that my having been a self-starter and tailored my education is something that you would view as a plus, but now we get to the moment of truth. Will you interview me? I hope to hear from you sincerely. Do you think that is better or worse than the approach that you use when applying for jobs?
I think that's a great idea, and I actually might modify my approach. Typically, my education's the very last section of the resume. I want to show everything I've done first, and then if they want to ask about my education, it's down there. But that's actually a great idea.
Doug?
I think the portfolio idea is a terrific idea. I tend to not care where a person got their education. I tend to not even ask. I do care what they've done. There is a lot of room for crossover. You can come from some fairly disparate fields, and yet if you've shown the sort of skills we're looking for, not just technical skills, one of the messages I'd like to get out is I know there's a lot of veterans out there coming back from overseas, and I've heard several friends mentioned, well, how is this going to help me get a job? Guys, what I'm looking for when there's a resume in front of me is don't just tell me you've got leadership skills. Tell me about the leadership skills that you applied. Tell me about the squad you led. Tell me about the problems you solved. Tell me about the organizational issues you overcame. I think there's great room for that to translate into the private sector.
That makes sense, but Doug, I want to push back a little bit on this notion of saying, you know, I don't care where you get your education. That may be true for you because you don't have a degree, but most people tend to like people like themselves, and the vast majority of people in a position of hire and engineers have degrees, and so they're going to start out with an a priori bias, if only what's called, you know, I don't know if it's confirmation bias, but the bias to, well, I did it and it worked for me, so you know, I'm going to look for the same kind of person. You know, I think you've got a bigger mountain to climb than that. And when you're dealing with applying for folks, then the people who are establishing the job specifications are generally a committee, most of whom have degrees, and they're going to say bachelor's required. So I think you need to be really preemptive about saying that, hey, I'm better than that because I didn't get a degree. That's my one opinion. Nathan, what do you think?
Well, I'd say that in general, I agree with what Doug says, and you're probably right that there's probably some sort of a bias for not having a degree in order to look at folks that don't. But in our field, we do get a lot of resumes coming in where people do have degrees. And just to reiterate what Doug said, you know, working in biotech, working in medical devices, we want to see people that can do a job that can be, you know, completely transparent in the work that they do, that can document things and that can, you know, sort of get a design out to somebody else to take and test it or whatever. And like Doug says, you know, you get that in a lot of different industries, a lot of different fields, and I've looked at people who had a completely inappropriate degree but had the completely appropriate experience in another field and have given them, you know, consideration for a job rather than just say, oh, well, screw it, they've been in, you know, some crazy, you know, way off in the boonies kind of field. We don't want that person. So I think it does, I think there is a bias, but I think it's not so much against degrees as it is opening your mind and saying, okay, well, here's kind of what I really need to fill the job, and then looking for where those skills may come from.
Okay, before I let you guys go, I'm going to invite the listeners to ask a question or two. Whether you are an employer and you are hiring, maybe you make a point of saying, I really want that bachelor's degree, maybe for substantive reasons, or maybe because it's just a clearly non-racist, sexist, homophobic, or classist approach to hiring, because you can say it's a degree, or you're an employee who has either especially if you have not had a degree and you have a different perspective that you'd like to share, anything related to the notion of people employed without a degree. If you have a question or for our guests, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I'll again announce these guys. I'm sure they like to hear their names. They say that the sound that we like to hear most of the name is the sound of our name. So Nathan Plant on the phone with us is an engineer at Cepheid. Doug Wolf is a senior systems engineer at C8 MetaSensors, and Chris Cassell is an engineer at iMation, a 3M company. And voila, the phones are already ringing, so let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and my three undegreed engineers. What's your question or comment for them?
Yes, hello, Marty. My name is Alex, and I can't remember which of your guests mentioned this point, but it's a key one, which is if you take a new area that is not developed at this point in time, where there's a crossroads of two technologies that come together, and therefore anybody with a degree wouldn't have that experience in that area, and you make yourself a volunteer for that learning process, then you become the expert.
Doug, that was your point, a great point. I'm going to go, that's a comment, so I'm going to just take another call. So thanks very much for emphasizing that point. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and my three undegreed engineers. What's your question or comment for them?
Hi there, great program.
Thank you.
Excellent example. I have a good friend who went from being a beer brewer with Gordon Beers to the biotech industry. When you're talking about the transferable skills, it's almost exactly the same type of thing where they have to know the process and being able to bring things up to a specific temperature. They hold it there for a time period. So the example of being able to transfer your skills from one area to the other is excellent.
Great. Thanks for the call. I love these. Let's get a lot of them in. All lines are lighted up here. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and my three engineers with no degree. What's your question or comment for them?
Hi. My name is Jill.
Hi, Jill.
I have a degree, but it's not in the area where I'm applying for a job and have an interview on Thursday.
Okay.
My degree is in vocational counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And the job is in arts administration, and the first qualification was for arts administration background.
Okay.
But I found it very helpful to make a chart, which somebody had suggested to me. And I, on the left side, I lined up the qualifications that were being desired for the job. And then on the right hand of the chart, I listed all of my experience that was relevant, so that rather than trying to poke through my resume to see where I might have gotten that experience, the employer could just see it.
Excellent idea. Let me amplify that a little more. It's, I love it. So my version of that, and I've touted a version of this on this show before, is the following.
I may have gotten the idea from you.
Oh, that could be. So, but for the listeners who hadn't heard that, it's something like this. The letter starts the same way as the letter I dictated earlier. Dear Mary, dear whoever concerned, I was delighted to see job number 4364 on, you know, edjoin.com, and because I believe I'm a good fit. You then, in bold print, list the first job requirement that's in the job that you know you meet well, and then you say, and you write it word for word, verbatim. Then underneath it, in bold print, you say how I meet the requirement, and then you write how you do it. Then after you've done that for four or five of the major requirements that you best fit, you then say, of course there's more to me than just can be conveyed in a chart. People say they really enjoy working with me, or whatever it is that's true about you that's good, so I'm hoping you'll interview me. So, yes, that's a potent technique, and I bet it's going to work for you. If you are indeed good, I bet you will become an arts administrator by the time you're finished with the usually endlessly long job interview process.
Thank you. I didn't do it in quite that format. I wrote a cover letter about why I would love the job, and then I attached this chart.
I understand. Sounds really good. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Okay, now we'll turn to our last question and we'll let you guys go. So now I'm going to ask you to, you know, obviously there's a natural tendency to come on the show and be this advocate for not going to college. So, but now I'm going to ask you the acid question. You're 18 years old. You're starting all over again. And you honestly had a choice. Now, you know, are you going to go and try to go for a degree program? Are you not? You're 18 years old, but you still aspire to be an engineer. Same career goal. You also, though, realize that college and education is not just, as Doug said, about career. It's about growing as a human being, as a creative and curious person. Each of you, Nathan, Chris, and Doug, what would you do at age 18? Would you go to college? If so, where, what, how? What would you do? If not, where, what, how? Let's start with you, Chris Cassell.
So I know this sounds kind of cliche, but I don't feel I learn well in a classroom. I feel I learn better outside of a classroom. But that being said, I feel like I missed out on the social aspect of college. So given a chance to do it again, I might just choose a cheesy little career, a major, and you know, something easy enough to do that interests me, and then you know, go back down the same path I am, but then get that social aspect of college.
Thank you, Chris. Doug?
I'd like to emphasize, I don't think that not doing the college is a shortcut. I think it's an alternate path. Mm-hmm. I would not call it a shortcut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
If you are just starting out, but you do not think college is for you or you can't afford it, I would maybe take some classes at a community college. I would look online for Coursera and places like that. Mm-hmm. I would absolutely...
That's by the way, Coursera. These are online courses offered from... Tell me more about... I only know a little about it. What kind of courses are offered at Coursera?
They are everything from beginner to upper level courses are usually taught by folks at Duke or Stanford or MIT. This is the real deal. This isn't someone trying to, you know, get you to pay $50 for a piece of paper. In fact, they're free, and there is no piece of paper. But really extraordinary amounts of knowledge and group discussions. It's the real deal.
And those are the kind of things, by the way, you can put on your resume. You may not have a degree, but you say, I took this course from the MIT instructor, this one from the Duke instructor. Please continue. How else, you're age 18, how else would you construct the Doug Wolf education?
It depends on what you want to do. If you want to be...
I want to hear about Doug Wolf. You're 18. You're Doug Wolf. I don't care about anybody else right now. I want to hear about what Doug Wolf would do.
What I would have done for the career path that I chose is I would have gone out and bought an Arduino, which is a small single board computer that is very easy to program. And I would have started writing things. In fact, the very first project like that I did as a kid is I built a little robot to chase my dog around just to learn about control and robotics, and because it's incredibly entertaining to build a robot that chases your dog around the basement. I would go out and find inexpensive kits and build stuff.
Great. Nathan Plant, if you're 18 years old, starting, you know you want a career somehow engineering related, how would you craft your education in or outside of classrooms?
Well, I'd echo what Doug said about Coursera, but there's also Khan Academy, which is, you know, still being built, but it's actually really, really fascinating, sort of crowdsource. I can't think of the word off the top of my head, but it's basically where you can get a whole bunch of videos for tutorials on just about anything you want to learn about.
That's K-H-A-N, by the way, folks.
K-H-A-N, right. It's got a lot of great technical and computer-based stuff, too. So that's one place I would go. In fact, I have a nephew that's coming up at the end of his high school career here, and he's maybe or maybe not going to be able to go to college. So I've been kind of helping him with, you know, sort of dummies books. He wants to be a software engineer. I told him, well, you know, I know something about that. I can help you learn that stuff. And even if you don't go to college, well, you know, there's some stuff you can do apart from that. So Khan Academy, Coursera. There's a great number of books out there you can check out from the library if you don't have the money to buy them that basically will walk you through how to do programming or how to do, you know, pretty much any kind of engineering that you want to do. And then the only other thing I would say is that if you are looking to teach yourself something, I think the most important single skill you can teach yourself is how to think logically, because troubleshooting is everywhere. And if you can't troubleshoot, it doesn't matter whether you want to be a biologist or whether you want to be a computer scientist or whether you want to, you know, just run a garbage truck, whatever. You're going to need to know how to troubleshoot stuff. And that's the skill I see lacking in most people today.
Well, and this is the $64,000 question then. To what extent can that be learned, and how would you go about trying to enhance your troubleshooting, problem-solving, rigorous thinking skills?
Well, one great way to do it is to do something akin to what Doug said, which is just do something and keep doing it. You know, either buy an Arduino or whatever it is you're interested in, and fail a whole bunch of times and learn from each mistake and just keep doing it. You know, I got to be honest, that's one of the reasons that I'm so successful, is because I never gave up. I didn't fail and then say, screw it, I'll move on to something else.
Doug Wolf, you want to add something to that?
I was just going to emphasize what Nathan said, and I think he's right. It takes 10,000 hours to learn how to do anything, and you're not going to be successful in many of those 10,000 hours.
Chris Cassell, how would you go about trying to improve your thinking skills, problem-solving skills?
Well, I mean, yeah, just doing it. Working on the house, when you run into a problem you don't know about, you have to go figure it out. Like Doug said, you're going to make a lot of mistakes. You're going to have to redo it. You're going to waste, you know, time and money, and that's how you learn.
I would add only one thing. You know, there are people who can be working at something by themselves forever and they don't grow, they don't learn. Not all wisdom resides within you. I believe in the primacy of doing that, you know, hands-on trying problems yourself and being relentless. But having mentors, having somebody to email when you run into a problem and you're stuck,
yes,
rather than sitting there and staring, there's a point when, okay, that's the learning moment. That's when you need some broadening of input. That's when you email somebody who you respect and say, I'm stuck here, and that's the way. Does that make sense?
That's actually a great point.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes, though, you can get past that stuck point by just putting it down and going and thinking about the problem. But, you know, if you have a mentor or someone to help you, you'll cut down on time, and I'm sure, yeah, cut down on time and expense.
Well, certainly. Again, Nathan, please go ahead. You get the last word.
I was just going to say, one of the first callers mentioned that he was a brewer, and then he went into biotech. And I just have to say, that's a great example of how crossovers can happen and how you can learn from, you know, mistakes in one field, apply them somewhere else. I can't tell you how many people I know in this field that are actually home brewers.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, I raise a glass of foamy in all of your honors. Thank you all for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemko. Again, Doug Wolf, senior engineer at C8 Metasensors, Chris Cassell, engineer at Imation, a 3M company, and Nathan Plant, engineer at Cepheid, a top medical diagnostics company. Three successful engineers, nice guys, not one degree among them. Thanks again for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemko.
Thanks, Marty.
Thanks, Marty.
Okay.
Thanks, Marty.
And now, my dear listeners, and guys, you can duck out or you can listen to the rest of the show, whatever you feel like. We now turn to you with your specific problem. Whether or not you have a degree, whatever your career problem, whether you're a clerk, a CEO, an artist, or an engineer, if you are stuck because you don't know what you want to be when you grow up, even though you're already 30, 40, 50, 60, if you are having trouble landing the job or you're a little nervous on the job, you may be afraid you're going to be on next on the layoff list, or you're trying to move up, Or you're successfully self-employed and want to be even more successful, or unsuccessfully employed and thinking of closing up shop and want some ideas. The phone number for all those reasons, or for what I call a three-minute career makeover or workover, except I won't pummel you. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. While I'm waiting for the calls to come in, I like sharing little tidbits. The EPA, you know, has just awarded $6.5 million for 10 projects right here in the Bay Area. You know, I know that the meme, the message that the media likes to give is that the governments are in trouble and the money is down. But truthfully, there is enormous spending going on from government. So if you are one of the millions of people who are very environmentally oriented, and again, it's not going to companies. You know, the truth is that the federal government is very, very anti-corporate. They are very, very pro-nonprofit and other government agencies. They like to fund each other. So here are the agencies that got money. There were no corporations that the federal government gave money to, no companies. They gave it to the San Francisco Estuary Partnership. Now, again, that's something that's under the radar. Everybody says, oh, I want to work for the EPA or I want to work for OSHA. But you don't think about these under the radar. There are endless, I call it metastasizing, but I don't want to editorialize too much. The government metastasizes into this ever larger set of agencies and sub-agencies, of which one is the San Francisco Estuary Partnership. It's much easier to find jobs in these little sub-agencies. There's another one that got money called the Association of Bay Area Governments. Then there's another one that got Napa County Flood Control District, Golden Gate National Parks Conservancy, the Presidio, the San Pablo Bay National Wildlife Refuge Organization, the California State Coastal Conservancy, the Clean Water Fund, some more money for San Francisco Estuary Partnership, the Alameda County Resource Conservation District, the San Mateo Resource Conservation District. So, truthfully, you know, most companies now are really cutting. They always, you know, because there's so much more increased taxation. Obamacare is going to be an enormous tax on companies. They don't want to hire anybody. And if they hire, they want to hire somebody for $8 an hour in India. They don't want to hire you at $80,000, an engineer at $80,000 with benefits and Obamacare and right to wrongful termination and Marriage and Family Leave Act and disability and workers' comp and everything else. So, but the government agencies don't do that. Because the government agencies, they're dealing with tax dollars. They're not going to go out of government's not going out of business. They can just print more money. So they can indeed say, okay, all the jobs are going to be hired with full-time, with benefits, etc. So if you're looking for a full-time benefited position, some of the most under-the-radar smart options to look at these under-the-radar government agencies. If you have a question for me, want a three-minute career makeover, 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. What's your question? How can I help?
Hey, good morning, Marty. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Hey, I'm a first-time listener, and I love the show, and I really like the Engineers Without Degrees program, and I was calling in to see if I could get my own three-minute makeover here.
Sure. Tell me your situation.
All right. So I'm entering my second year of my master's degree in physics at San Francisco State, and I honestly don't know what I want to do afterwards, and I'm trying to figure out if I want to go somewhere into science, or if I want to try and maybe pursue a different area of career. And some of the different directions I've considered might maybe be finance. There seems to be kind of a risque topic, but there's kind of a desire for...
I don't know about risque, but risky.
Yeah, risk analysis and finance. They look for physics degrees.
Right.
Also, there's other guys that go on to do, I don't know, all kinds of stuff. Have you seen any guys in physics go on, with master's degrees in physics go on to do anything outside of physics?
Sure, it happens all the time. I mean, Wall Street does hire these guys as analysts, as people developing prediction analytic formulas and the like. But let's start with, you know, at the risk of sounding like a cliched career counselor, let's start with fun. If you weren't worried about practicality for this moment, what would you have fun using your good brain, your analytic brain, to do? Would you be a brewer? Would you be a video game designer? Would you be a financial analyst? Would you be a stock picker? Would you simply be a physicist on nanotechnology trying to create some cool new fibers? Would you be trying to analyze the proteomics of genetics of intelligence and trying to figure out, you know, how we can keep people from being so stupid?
Well, You know, I think my best skill that I could bring is this skill that I've been trained in all of my physics training, which is natural problem solving. And you know, I have some training in photonics. That's where my area of research mm-hmm. is in, and I'm just I'm not quite sure if I want to keep doing that. I mean, I consider a lot about guys who are happy in their jobs, and I hear people that are happy doing engineering and science research in their lives, but I also hear guys that are miserable doing it.
Okay.
I'm
going to interrupt you because that's the way we do it on radio in order to get things done quickly. My intuition says listening to you is you don't want a job in science, that you want to use your problem skills outside of science. Am I reading you right?
Yep, you're reading me right.
Okay, dude. So now, we're going to play a game. You ever gone to the eye doctor and the eye doctor tells you is it better with lens one or lens two?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to play that game with you now.
Okay.
It's like a computer branching program. We're going to narrow down with these various paired choices. So, would you rather? You said you were in photonics. Would you rather work for Bausch and Lomb, or Zeiss, the lens company, creating ever finer lenses, or would you rather rather work for the fundraising arm of San Francisco State University?
I would go for Zeiss lenses.
Would you rather work for Celestron Telescope Company or Zeiss lenses?
Probably Celestron. That'd be really cool.
Okay, Celestron telescopes or electron microscopes?
Electron microscopes, definitely.
Okay, electron microscopes or binoculars?
Probably electron microscopes.
Okay, now we're going to create a meter. And what's your first name?
My name's Sam.
Sam, we're going to create a Sam meter, and the Sam meter goes from 0 to 10. With 0 means the idea makes you puke, and 10 means it gives you an orgasm, okay?
You got it.
All right. So the idea of working for working on electron microscope, using your great problem-solving, troubleshooting skills or whatever, either it be the QA guy or a development guy or whatever it is, working for an electron microscope company, what does that score on a Sam meter?
That's pretty high up there. That's getting pretty orgasmic.
Is it a 10?
I would say that's a 10, yeah.
Okay, dude, so here's the deal. What I want you to do now is I want you to make a list, because the odds of any one of them hiring you are really little. You don't have a PhD from MIT or Caltech. You're going to have a master's degree. What I want you to do is we need to increase your odds. I want you to make a list of the 5 or 10 greatest, most high-quality, cutting-edge, fabulous electron microscopy companies.
All right.
And then I want you to study each of them for about 10 or 15 minutes each, Google them, read their website, look at blogs, look at LinkedIn discussion groups, see, you know, where the electron microscopy forums are, read so you sound like you're not an idiot. And then I want you to write a great letter to the person who could hire you, not HR, but somebody who's probably not the president, but some kind of a director or VP level person. And which you explain how you can even start with this phone call that we had. You were trying to figure out what to do, and you came in, you called the show on NPR, and voila, this is what came up, and you're really excited about it, and you like his particular company because of blah, which is something you learn from the research, and you write 5 of those, a letter to each somebody at each of 5 or 10 companies, and then a week later, if you haven't heard, you call the follow-up, and you say, I'm Sam the Man, not literally, but you know, whatever your last name is, not having heard from you, I'm assuming you're not interested, but I know how things can fall between the cracks. So I'm taking the liberty of calling to follow up. I'm kind of a follow-through guy. So if you might be willing to talk with me, see how I might be able to be of help to you, or even to offer some advice as to where I should turn, I'd love hearing from you. What do you think about that, Sam, as your plan?
I think that's a great plan, Marty, and I think you're a great resource, and I'm very thankful that you took my call, man.
It's a pleasure. You know, but, you know, now you have an obligation. You know what your obligation is?
What's that?
You're going to call back. You're going to do this week and next Sunday when we get to the call-in segment. You're going to call in and you're going to either say that you're a piece of crap who didn't do any of it, or that you followed through and you got nowhere, or you followed through and you're in process of getting a job, or that you got 3 job offers. You're going to call back?
I'm going to call you back.
Good, Sam. Take care. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Phone number here if you want me to torture you, help you with your career-related problem. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Hello, it's you.
Me?
Yes.
Hi. I just wanted to call out, you were saying, I think you were saying because of Obamacare, companies aren't hiring, and that could be true. I don't know. And engineers are overseas. That also could be true in some cases, but there's a lot of healthcare regulation that's creating a lot of software jobs.
Yep.
And
some of that's offshore and some of it's here. But yes, there's no question that regulations are creating tons of jobs. Whether you want those jobs is another story, but it's absolutely correct.
So I just wanted to call that out because there's software companies who are looking hard for engineers and product managers right in this area.
One of the it's called regulatory affairs, and it is a huge growing area. The two engineers who were on the show are still looking here, and they look like they're both ready to have to puke. But yes, it's and actually, I have done some. People love it. I know people in regulatory affairs, and they actually it a lot.
I'm actually talking about software development. There's a lot of healthcare software products being built, and interesting problems to solve.
That's a fair point, and right, electronic medical records and all that stuff is indeed.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely right. You are an honored member of the Work with Marty Nemco workforce, and I am honored by your call. Thanks for calling. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air.
Hi. That's an interesting call. I'm a physicist, and I have a volunteer project I'm working on at Noisebridge, and I have, guess what, an electron microscope that I have to fix for free, and Sam, I would love Sam's assistance on this project.
Woo.
Sounds like he would have fun doing it.
Right.
So I'm glad he's calling back next week. That's fantastic. I could leave my email off the line.
Yeah.
Or whatever you want to do.
Yeah. As soon as you get off the line, my dear board operator Joanne Marr will take your information. That is another great call. I really appreciate when we can help each other in these areas. I love it. Thanks a lot for calling, dude.
It's just a volunteer that I'm doing, and you know, it's not a scary employment situation. So
it's great training. When the guy does his work, he can then he should first work with you, and then he can write to these electron microscopy companies, and he can talk about his work project. He could send a work sample of what he did. He can say what he accomplished. That's total gold. I love it.
Exactly. All right.
Great call.
All right.
Thanks a lot. All right, I'm loving these calls, so let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Or what do you want? How can you help us? Hello, it's you.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, hello. Hi, my name is Sue. I'm calling to my mom, who is 77 years old. She's been working as a volunteer coordinator for Meals on Wheels for the last 13 years, and she just found out she's going to be laid off. She has great personality, but no computer skills. And she's wondering, where in the world is she going to get a job?
Well, the most, you know, when you unfortunately, we do live in an ageist society. And I know some 77-year-olds who are still quite vibrant. But it'll be easier for her to get a job if she goes and tries to, you know, as silly as this sounds, you go for the exact kind of same job at other organizations. There's tremendous needs for volunteer coordinators all over the place. So she should ask herself in her heart of hearts what charity she most believes in. Maybe she believes in literacy. Maybe she believes in the environment. Maybe she believes in Jewish children. Whatever it is she believes in. And she should make a list of all the nonprofits that serve those causes. Say that she's been a successful volunteer coordinator at Meals on Wheels. Here have been some of her accomplishments. Here's what she does well. And are you looking for a volunteer coordinator? But she's got to be systematic. Again, the odds of anyone saying yes are small. So for her, the magic number would be 10. I want her to make a list of the 10 organizations that I gave her $1 million she'd most want to give her money to, and go and contact those. By the way, do you know what she cares most about?
She's excellent with older people. She's very kind. She's very generous. She has a lot of patience. Her own mother has just turned 100.
Wow.
So she has a lot of experience with older people. She's been in the field for a long time, but she's very scared of computer. I mean, any job now needs some type of computer literacy, and she doesn't have it. Maybe
that's fine if she, and I'm not going to take the obvious and say let her go get it. It takes too long. It's going to make her crazy. What I would rather see her try to do at this point is sell her existing expertise. It's not always necessary. No candidate for any job has all the qualifications. She brings a lot of other stuff to the table, and what she's got to do is sell what she brings to the table, not try to remediate her greatest weakness at age 77. At least least for starters, I sure wouldn't do that. But if she likes older people, there's hospices. There's, you know, I mentioned the Jewish thing. There's the Jewish home for the aged for whatever reason. There's, you know, there's plenty of senior citizen programs. And she could easily, and being 77 in her case would be a plus. If she's working for an older person's organization instead of being a minus, like if she was working at preschool tutoring programs, she would do better working for an elder organization. Make sense?
That sounds great. I don't know how you knew we were Jewish, but you're right.
I can. You know what? I've been doing this 24 years, and because it's radio, you sense, you have this. You're listening very carefully between the lines. You just get a feeling. So anyway, thanks a lot for calling. Work with Marty Nunko.
I love your show, and I loved when your wife is on also.
She's coming. I think she's coming in a couple of weeks.
Okay, I'll listen for her. Thanks for your help.
Okay, very good. I've got plenty I want to tell you, but these calls are too fun, so let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, I'm 52. Been a product manager in Silicon Valley for 25 years, and recently was laid off, and we are was looking for a product manager job. And what I'm finding is suddenly people have added the requirement to be an engineer as a background to doing the product management work, which in my experience isn't actually necessary. I was wondering what you recommend and how to overcome that.
Right.
Because the
economy continues to be very slow, employers can ratchet up requirements, and they do it all the time, just as a way of screening, because they get dozens, if not hundreds, of applicants for every job. So what you want, normally, especially at age 52, and if you're lacking what is now perceived, correctly or incorrectly, as a requirement, is you've got to use your extended personal network. Not just the few people you know that are obvious, because I bet you already contacted them, but studies have shown that people outside of your immediate level of your sphere of influence know a lot of other people. It's like, I may be a career counselor, but I know dentists, I know artists, I know CEOs. So make a list. Your magic number is 30. You are to make a list of the 30 people on planet Earth who like you and who know people, who are not hermits like me who sit in my room writing all the time, but people who know a lot of people. And you pitch them and you say, I am a very good product manager with my particular skills in X, Y, or Z. Here have been a couple of my major accomplishments. Do you know somebody I should talk with? You don't ask for a job. The rule is, if you ask for a job, you get advice. If you ask for advice, you get a job. So you go and you simply ask, who else should I talk with? If they've got an actual job, they can give it to you, even if they're in the field, and the chances are they're not in the field. If I said that is your plan, how does that feel?
Sounds like a good plan.
All right, thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco. I'll take one more call, and then I'll offer a couple of tips to end the show. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, am I on?
You are.
Oh, wow, great. Okay, I'm actually calling for my older sister, who told me she's too shy to call.
Okay,
but
I understand.
So I wanted to call for.
Sure.
So she just got a degree in social work,
mm-hmm.
and she's middle-aged. She's 55.
Mm-hmm.
And she's feeling like there's ageism, and
there is. It's one strike against you, but it's not three.
She's new to the field.
Yep.
So she's kind of, you know. Anyway, that's the dilemma.
So what's critical is focus at that point. If she just scatters shots to every social service agency, she's just going to look like another 55-year-old newbie. Not going to work. Let's identify a niche for her. Let's pretend you're her. You know, social work can be everything from medical social work to child protective services to, you know, if there was a goddess and the goddess were looking down upon her, what would the goddess say was her greatest potential to make a difference and really be a successful person?
Probably working with children and families.
Okay. And working more as a therapist. You know, there are these LCSWs, these licensed clinical social workers who work and basically do therapy with families. Then there are the more traditional social workers who go in people's homes and try to help problem solve and set them up with the appropriate resources. Where would your sister most likely fit best?
Probably on the therapeutic side.
On the therapeutic side. And these are families now with the most social workers are hired by the not private people, because they can't afford, people who are struggling in that way don't have the money to pay for any private therapist. If I said I want her to make a list of the 10 community mental health agencies that are geographically closest to where she lives, so she doesn't have a ridiculous commute, and to write a letter explaining, and maybe also You know, being 55, there are many non-traditional families, especially I know a lot about the black community because I spent a lot of time in Richmond and in New York City. There are a lot of kids who are living with their grandparents. And so her being older, if she could especially, you know, she could say, I am a new social worker who's particularly good at, and I'm 55, which would be particularly helpful in working with older guardians of children. That might be a way to use her age to her advantage. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's actually a good idea.
Okay. I thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Okay.
We've got 2 minutes left, so let me give you a couple of little tips that have been crossing my desk here. You know what I want to do that I like? This is something that came across my desk. It's a story. Somebody who I imagine that many listeners to this show, a guy who'd hate, is T. Boone Pickens. He's an oil man, a corporate man. He is emblematic of everything that many Bay Area people puke at. I found this an interesting story. It came out of Forbes magazine, and it's his story of how he started. And the title of this thing is called Take This Job and Shove It. He said, I got the best traits from both of my parents. My dad was a risk taker. A friend of his once told me, your dad would stand on his head and bet his ass. I didn't know if that was a compliment or not. My dad was an oil well lease broker. He made a little money in the 30s, then went belly up in 39. My mother was the opposite. She was very analytical and an excellent bridge player. She didn't believe in sticking her neck out for anything. We lived in Holdenville, Oklahoma for a time. I mowed lawns and had a paper route. By 16, I was roughnecking on an oil rig. We moved to Amarillo, Texas. In the summer, I worked as a fireman for the Santa Fe Railroad. I spent 1 year at Texas A&M, then went to Oklahoma A&M studying geology. I got married. We had a daughter while I was in college. I knew I had to get a job out of school pretty quick. I was sure my dad was going to give me some money when I graduated. I told my wife, he's going to give me $300. He stuck his hand out and said, son, I have one more thing for you. And I thought, here comes the money. And he said, good luck. I'm looking at the clock. I'll read a little more, and then we're going to have to stop in the middle, but I want to finish. I like the story. I had two job offers out of school, one from Exxon and one from Phillips. The Exxon offer was a surface job. That's a worker. I didn't want to do that. It was more hands-on work. So I went to Phillips and moved to headquarters in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. I was 23. I made $290 a month. I don't want to be too critical of Phillips. They didn't come looking for me. I went looking for them, and they gave me a job. But I was amused by some of the things they did. Things were pretty rigid. They rang a bell to dismiss us for lunch, another to get us back to work. It was like they thought we couldn't tell time. I was never in a hurry to leave at 5. One time, just after 6, I was still working, and a security guard came up and asked me what I was doing. I'm not done with my work, I told him. He told me I had to leave the building, and they had their eye on me because this wasn't the first time I'd been working late. Then one day I went to look at a new Oldsmobile, the 88. I couldn't afford it, but I wanted to look anyway. My supervisor called me in the next day and said he knew I'd been looking at the Oldsmobiles and I should know that the vice president of Phillips owned a Chevy dealership, and if I was going to buy a new car, I'd better get a Chevy. I wasn't offended because I could barely afford a bicycle, but the message was clear. They were a big company, and they got in your life pretty good. I will continue with this story next week because we are out of time. But that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. My thanks to my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute career makeovers on callers, and I'll talk with Dr. Steve Hsu. He is vice president for research at Michigan State. He is also leading a Beijing Genomics Institute initiative to discover what really causes brain power and what can ethically be done to enhance it. You can call in for 3-minute career makeover, too. Make sure you do that. Anyway, that's Work with Marty Nemko Sunday as usual at 11. Until then, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.